This is the Celt Father, Mark Gunn, and you're listening to the Secret Fire Podcast.
Gandalf, my old friend, this will be a night to remember.
Broadcasting from the last homely house in Rivendell, Middle-earth, this is the Secret Fire Podcast, sent to burn at the heart of the world, episode number 29. I'm Michael.
I'm Brendan.
I'm Micah.
On this episode, we have finished what may be the most epic chapter ever written, and are ready to dive into book 2, chapter 3 of The Lord of the Rings, The Ring Goes South. And we invite you to come along, join the fellowship, become a servant of the Secret Fire each week here on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
I could fix that, you know, in post, as they say.
You could.
Here we are, Micah. Where are we?
We are in Bilbo's room.
In Lotro, mm-hmm. Lord of the Rings Online. We are in Bilbo's room because that's where this chapter begins. But first, guys, it's been a while since we've been in studio. We've all celebrated Christmas. How was your Christmas?
It was fun.
Oh.
It was good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah, we good. Had an aluminum tree.
How was it? What, did you bake cool. It upside down with butter?
No, that was the turkey, Michael.
Mm. Not well, how'd you prepare the aluminum tree?
Very carefully. I'd never seen an aluminum tree, and my mom found her.
They're going extinct, I hear.
The one, well, they're going extinct, and they're going for a lot of money, apparently.
Very a lot.
Very a lot, very much.
Yes.
And my mom found the one that she had when she was growing up in storage.
Wow.
She found it. So we set it up.
Was it still fresh?
Hey, evergreen.
Nice.
Ever silver.
So it was a silver aluminum tree?
Yes, yes. And then she wanted to buy a color wheel.
Yeah. That would go under. We're going back to the 1950s, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
However, those are also very expensive. So we brought a comparable LED fade light. That worked just as well, if not better.
Wonderful.
So that was cool.
So it's all glittery and...
Yeah. It's nice. Sparkly, man. It's so cool. It's so cool. Because I'd never seen an aluminum tree before.
Or are these true to scale, like an actual tree size? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This one was like 5'2".
They were all the rage back in the 1950s and early 60s and things like that. Before my day. But I do recall them still being in use even as I was a young whippersnapper. And so you cooked another turkey.
Yeah, upside down.
Upside down with butter in the cavity. Sir. We haven't done that as of yet.
I'm telling you, man.
You know, I went to the store last night with my wife. Those turkeys, they aren't giving those things away, man.
No, they're not.
Hey, Brendan, tell us a little bit about your Christmas caroling.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because this is a tie-in to our previous episode, actually.
Of course, yeah. I got a group that I go Christmas caroling with. We've been doing it since about the senior year of high school.
A quartet? Back in,
yeah, yeah. Sometimes a quartet. This year, a triptet. There are only three of us. One of us couldn't make it. But it's okay. We just
meet. I would just call it a trio.
A trio.
Yes,
yeah,
that's what I would.
A triptet sounds weird.
Strange.
Yeah, no one likes that. but anyway, we just went to a restaurant in Shelbyville. We Christmas caroled. We went to Legends. We were there on Christmas Eve. We sang carols in the lobby for an hour, and then we went out into the restaurant and sang for another hour. It was really fun.
What are some of the songs that you sang?
Oh, you know, classics like my personal favorite, Hark the Herald Angels Sing. And then some
Hark,
slower.
Mark and Harold Angels Sing.
No, not those.
Oh.
Not that one.
Mark and Gerald?
No, Michael. But we added something new to our repertoire this year.
What was that?
As in, we really wish we had time to practice it, but we didn't. I, however, did my own personal tenor studying by listening to Broselion's Gaudete.
Hey!
And
we played that on the previous episode.
We did. And what I learned was that I cannot follow tenor. on that recording.
By Christoph is the tenor in Broceliande, and he's a fantastic tenor.
He is, yes. Yeah. Much more complicated, much more, I'll say this, much more nuanced tenor line than I could ever imagine.
He really gets around.
I just stuck to the chorus.
God a take. Now I want to listen to that song. You know what? Okay, you said that Christmas begins the day after Halloween?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah, in my book of personal subjectivity, yeah.
And so when does it end? The day before
January
Halloween?
5th.
January 5th?
Yeah.
Well.
Epiphany, Bubba.
Okay. Well, in fact, the
Eureka moment. Aha!
Aha! In fact, Yuletide goes through...
What?
Yuletide.
Yuletide.
Well, it's a 12-day festival. When does it end? On January 6th?
January 5th.
Oh, does it?
On the 5th. The 6th is the first not day of it.
The first not day?
Yeah.
Of the first not Yuletide day?
The un-Yule
day. So it's still Christmas here. So since we've skipped on a few weeks of podcasts and I haven't been able to play all the Middle Earth Christmas music I've wanted to.
How un-Yule-y of us.
We were very un-Yule-y. We get to go ahead and stick with the Christmas theme because I've been really, really wanting to play this song by Mark Gunn. Called Christmas in the Shire. And tell me if this is an elegiac lament. You listen to it and tell me afterwards.
I've wandered through this world of ours for countless years on end. Seen wonders that I can't describe and troubles I could not mend. Yet as the year comes to a close, my heart begins to yen. Days of old and folks long gone, my thoughts go back to then. Long ago the Yule bells rang, I still recall their chime. Oh, to be back in the Shire again, now that it's Christmas time. Long ago the Yule bells rang, I still recall their chime. Oh, to be back in the Shire again. Now that it's Christmas time. To find myself at home once more where life was so slow and sweet. Amongst the hobbits whom I adore, old friends I can't wait to greet. The bell ringer lads made their rounds as the sun sank into bed. Farthing to farthing echoed the sounds till the moon raised up his head. Long ago the Yule bells rang, I still recall their chime. Oh, to be back in the Shire again, now that it's Christmas time. Long ago the Yule bells rang, I still recall their chime. Oh, to be back in the Shire again, now that it's Christmas time. In Buckland, Tuckborough, Bywater and Bree, every fireside was alight. Warmth and comfort provided for free, crackled loud and flickered bright. With kith and kin gathered at side, we gave thanks for all we had. Where home and hearth and peace abide, our hearts were ever glad. Long ago the Yule bells rang, I still recall their chime. Oh, to be back in the Shire again, now that it's Christmas time. Long ago the Yule bells rang, I still recall their chime. Oh, to be back in the Shire again, now that it's Christmas time. Sit me down and name my pleasure mug of beer or vintage rare. Rings of smoke blown at leisure, sup a favorite hobbit fare. 6 days of feasts and frolicking fun, songs and stories to delight. Rich or poor, we all shared as one, danced and reveled long into the night. Long ago the Yule bells rang, I still recall their chime. Oh, to be back in the Shire again, now that it's Christmas.
Christmas time. Long ago the Yule bells rang, I still recall the chime. Oh, to be back in Shire again. Now that it's Christmas time.
That is an elegiac lament, if I ever heard one, is it not?
It is.
And that is a fantastic example of an elegiac lament.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about that, and going all the way back, it was Thomas that really brought that concept to our attention, saying, hey, pay attention to the elegiac laments. Mm-hmm. And what a blessing it is that we have. And we're going to have some actually in this chapter that we're going to talk about today. But Brendan, can you speak to the concept of elegiac lament? What does that actually mean?
Well, just that you're basically expressing the sadness that you feel at something or someone passing.
Okay.
You're longing to be back with them or that thing or in that place that is now passing or already passed.
I wonder if at this time of the year, because in this chapter we are right around Christmas time, when the ring does go south, I wonder if the hobbits, if Sam and Pippin and Merry and Frodo, son of Drogo, son of GoPro. Yes, and yeah. Even Bilbo, I wonder if they are singing this song in their hearts. You know, as they are, oh, to be back in the Shire again. This is such a beautiful, beautiful song. And I wasn't satisfied to just play this song for the listeners and have them enjoy that, allow Mark Gunn to take them into the Shire or to long for Christmas time in the Shire, because I long for Christmas time in the Shire. Micah, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
What would it be like to experience Yule Fest and Christmas in the Shire? And so I got on Skype with Mark Gunn because I wanted to find out more. Mark, tell us the story behind this song, Christmas in the Shire. How did it come about?
The lyrics were written by my friend Nancy Flynn, who I met at a long-expected party. The Hobbit gathering that happens in Shakertown, Kentucky, every 3 years.
Yes.
I think I met her at the very first one of those. And she wrote songs, and she was inspired in part by some of the stuff that I was doing. She sent me two Christmas songs that she had written, and the stories that were pretty much inspired by our gatherings at a long expected party, because they were very personable, intimate. You know, we sit around the fire and sing songs, and it was just a beautiful experience.
Much of your music seems to be based on experiences with people. So talk a little bit about the emotion and the feeling you were trying to evoke in Christmas in the Shire.
You know, the lyrics obviously are a big inspiration, and I knew exactly where she was coming from when she sent them to me. And I felt it's a very deep, homey, familial experience. It's like being with family. You know, a lot of people, when they write songs, they're in the folk circles, it seems like they're usually writing about the people, about the heroes of the story. But for me, I like imagining what it's like to be there. And so that's one of the things that touched me about these lyrics, is that it's you know, this is Christmas in the Shire with your fellow hobbits, you know, being a part of that world. There's something magical, you know, that we love about Lord of the Rings, and we don't want to just read about it. We want to live it.
A question for all of us Middle Earthlings out there. When did you first discover Middle Earth, and what impact did it have on Mark Gunn?
I found the Hobbit movie in the sixth grade is what I was introduced to it. And it was about that time, shortly thereafter, I think, is when I started playing Dungeons and Dragons. And my first characters were a hobbit, or halflings, rather. But I think my love of hobbit holes extends back even further. I remember, I don't know, when I was a kid, I remember being in closets just because it was comfortable, you know, sitting in a closet just because it was, I don't know, something very warming, comfortable, safe, being in that little closet. I remember sitting in the back of the car, and you know, we'd pack up the car, and we have way too much stuff. And I'm like, you can keep packing stuff. I'll just huddle up into a little ball, and I'll be fine. You know?
Yes.
And I'm like, that's always felt comfortable. So I think when the halflings and hobbits came along, it was sort of like a revelation. It was like, whoa, And it's still, you know, I mean, it still resonates. I'm walking around purgatory right now. That's what I call my office downstairs where my cat Tore used to be locked up. but it's a very comfortable, for me, a very comfortable room. And it's, you know, this is where I spend a lot of my time. It's just a small little enclosure where I can, you know, master of my domain.
So then it sounds like you can relate to both Bilbo and Frodo, who felt drawn to Bag End and their books and their things to make them feel whole and comfortable. Is that an accurate assessment of you, do you think? Does that describe you, or is there more hobbitishness in there than that?
There's definitely a tookish part of me, though, that that wants to go out into the world, but it always wants to bring me home. You know, I always want to come back home to afterwards to, you know, for my quiet time. That's my, you know, I am a big introvert. And so I love going out into the world. I love traveling. I travel through these Celtic invasion vacations to exotic locations around the world. But I always want to come back home to my family, to my hearth, to my little writing desk. You know, that's what it's. What brings me back all the time.
This is a great track off the album, Celtic Christmas Greetings. Tell listeners a little bit more about the album and how they can get a copy.
There's a lot of original songs, a few traditional songs, but it all has a Celtic feel to it from my perspective. That's the way I look at majority of my music is it's got a Celtic feel. You can find it, of course, I have my website, markgunn.com, but I also have a website called CelticChristmasMusic.net, which hosts all my Christmas stuff.
So a big thanks to Mark Gunn for coming on with me, talking about this track, the story behind it, where it came from, and the emotions and the feelings that go behind it, and how he pictures being in this setting. It was a fantastic song. Great thoughts from Mark Gunn. Get over to his website. Again, he spells his name cool on both ends because it's markgunn.com. Make sure you get all of his music. He's got tons and tons and tons. He's very prolific. And he did assure me that here in the near future, we can have him back on for a longer period of time talking about music and how it relates to Middle Earth and how it binds us together and the power of music.
Awesome.
So there you go, Mark Gunn on Secret Fire Podcast. All right. Anything else about Christmas before we move on?
Not for me.
Nah, I'm Christmased out.
You are Christmased out?
Yeah, and that's hard to say.
Ooh. Bah humbug.
Say it 10 times fast. Christmased out.
Christmased out.
Christmased out.
Christmased out.
Christmased out.
Christmased stout. It's a brew.
Yes.
It's a homemade brew. Christmased stout.
All right, so we spent 8 episodes talking about...
Fermented holly and ivy. Christmas stout.
Otherwise known as...
What? Oh. Sorry, I was thinking of the Christmas stout.
Oh, I thought you came up with an alternate name to the chapter...
The Council of Elrond?
Yes.
No.
Okay, 8 episodes.
You can't have an alternate chapter on that.
And do you think that I'm like being crazy by claiming that that's maybe one of the most epic chapters written?
Michael, I don't know.
What, in the book or just like in ever?
Ever.
Yeah, you're right about
Man,
that.
Man, have you read Moby Dick?
I tried.
Man.
I tried.
You tried?
He's putting me on the spot here, and I have to be honest.
Well,
I'm going to try again. Okay. I'll try again. I was young when I tried the first time.
Well, that is a lot.
And it's not for young people.
It is not. That is true. It is not.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe the listeners will have some stuff to weigh in on that. I don't know.
Well, eight episodes because there was so much going on in that chapter. And a few things that I want to remind people of what we saw in the chapter. Well, it's book 2, chapter 2, The Council of Elrond. We saw the 3 offices of the Christ, of the Messiah. We saw the prophet, priest, and king. And how did we do that? Just real quick. Gandalf, and this is according to Peter Kraft, it's he that first pointed out that concept to me. Hey, you have the Messiah revealed in 3 figures in The Lord of the Rings, at least 3 figures, but he focused on these 3 in his seminar. Not seminar. What is the word?
Lecture.
Why can't I ever say lecture?
I don't know.
Okay.
Why can't you?
Hannibal Lecture. Lecture.
No.
Okay.
Ooh.
Gandalf
no.
as the prophet, and he was speaking on behalf of Iluvatar.
Of fava beans. and a nice Chianti.
Sorry. Oh, there's Windows wanting to update Micah's computer again.
Windows is harassing me.
Yes. Look,
Microsoft's Edge is much better than Chrome, apparently.
Yeah, it told me so when I was getting ready. But.
So Gandalf is speaking on behalf of Iluvatar, especially in his interaction with Saruman. You have left the path of wisdom, right?
Hello, Clarice.
No, don't bring us there. Just like, stay in the...
No, that's my job. Sorry. That's my job.
Sorry. Oh, yeah, because we have our jobs given to us now.
Aragorn. Oh, my goodness. How many weeks has it been?
Man, too
I
long.
Apologize. Too long. First to my son, because yes. He's just shaking his head.
I can't believe
how appropriate.
How appropriate. Aragorn as the king... revealing himself as the prophesied king. Remember, we went back to Psalm chapter 40, and especially verse 7, I have come in the scroll of the book. What did I do now?
I was just thinking once again of Radagast the Brown.
Yes, boy, we are. And then, of course, there's Frodo as the priest, and he is appointed to take the sacrifice. The sacrifice of himself being the scape hobbit or the scapegoat, taking that, the sin, the burden of Middle Earth into the wilderness. And that is where we left off at the end of the chapter. And I want to play a little clip to get us ready to jump into the next chapter from the 1981 BBC dramatization of The Lord of the Rings.
I, Frodo, son of Drogo, will take the ring, though I do not know the way.
If I understand aright all that I have heard, I think that the task is appointed for you, Frodo, and that if you do not find a way, no one will. This is the hour of the Shire folk, when they arise from their quiet fields to shake the towers and councils of the great. But it is a heavy burden, so heavy that none could lay it on another. I do not lay it on you, but if you take it freely, I will say that your choice is right.
But you won't send him off alone, surely, Master Elrond.
No, indeed, Sam Gamgee. You at least shall go with him. It is hardly possible to separate you from him, even when he is summoned to a secret council, and you are not.
It's a nice pickle we've landed ourselves in, Mr. Frodo.
Yes, that was a nice pickle. And that was a great little performance there by FCC's very own Bill Nighy.
Yes.
As Samwise Gamgee.
Yeah.
FCC, of course, is our other show, Finding Christ in Cinema. And sometimes the lines are blurred between the two.
They are.
Anything to say about the chapter? I think that we covered it in depth, 8 episodes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we got it.
All right. Let's go ahead and move on. Chapter 3.
Chapter 3 of Book 2, The Ring Goes South. Later that day, the hobbits held a meeting of their own in Bilbo's room. Merry and Pippin were indignant when they heard that Sam had crept into the council and had been chosen as Frodo's companion. "It's most unfair," said Pippin. "Instead of throwing him out and clapping him in chains, Elrond goes and rewards him for his cheek."
And I love the audiobook version.
The Rob Inglis?
Rob Inglis, the voice of Tolkien. To hear him voice Pippin is just great. Oh, yeah.
"Rewards," said Frodo. "I can't imagine a more severe punishment. You are not thinking of what you're saying. Condemned to go on this hopeless journey, a reward? Yesterday I dreamed that my task was done and I could rest here a long while, perhaps for good." "I don't wonder," said Merry, "and I wish you could. But we are envying Sam, not you. If you have to go, then it will be a punishment for any of us to be left behind, even in Rivendell."
Listen to that. There's a lot in that line. Merry has to jump in. "If you have to go, then it will be punishment for any of us to be left behind." Why should we be punished, right? Mm-hmm. Why should we be punished having to stay behind? We stick together. You're one of us. We're one of each other. It's the fellowship. This is our family, right?
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
There you go. "We have come a long way with you and been through some stiff times. We want to go on." "Well, that's what I meant," said Pippin. "We hobbits ought to stick together, and we will. I shall go unless they chain me up. There must be someone with intelligence in the party."
"Then you will certainly not be chosen, Peregrine Took," said Gandalf, looking in through the window, which was near the ground. "But you are all worrying yourselves unnecessarily. Nothing is decided yet."
I love this.
"Nothing decided," cried Pippin. "Then what were you all doing? You were shut up for hours."
It took 8 episodes for us to get through that chapter. That's what Pippin's saying. These guys, he's pointing out, breaking the fourth wall. Do you see these 3 guys in here? It took them 8 episodes of a podcast to get through what you guys are talking about.
This is not Deadpool does Lord of the Rings. We're not breaking any fourth walls.
Okay.
It's okay. It's okay. I still haven't seen it either.
I was just trying to have a little fun.
I know. "Talking," said Bilbo. "There was a great deal of talk, and everyone had an eye-opener. Even old Gandalf. I think Legolas's bit of news about Gollum caught even him on the top.
On the hop.
On the hop, excuse me. Though he passed it off." "You were wrong," said Gandalf. "You were inattentive. You were inattentive. I had already heard of it from
Gwaihir,
thank you. If you want to know, the only real eye-openers, as you put it, were you and Frodo. And I was the only one that was not surprised."
Ah, what's he saying there? In the whole council, the only real eye-openers were these two, the least of these, right?
I think it's something, he says, I am the only one that was not surprised. That means even Elrond...
Yes.
Was surprised by all this.
Which actually goes to bolster the point of Gandalf being prophet. Mm-hmm. You know, he knows these things. That's why he chose Bilbo as the 14th member of the company, right? And that is why he wanted that ring to go into the possession of Frodo. He knows enough about how things can play out that these two individuals are very important. The least of these. God chooses the foolish things to shame the wise. Mm-hmm. Right? That's in 1 Corinthians.
And I think we actually get a heavier dose of that later on. Hopefully in today's episode.
Well.
If it's where I'm thinking about.
Okay.
Which, if we'll get there, we'll talk about
it. If we get there, we get there.
"Well, anyway," said Bilbo, "nothing was decided beyond choosing poor Frodo and Sam. I was afraid all the time that it might come to that if I was let off. But if you ask me, Elrond will send out a fair number when reports come in. Have they started yet, Gandalf?" "Yes," said the wizard. Some of the scouts have been sent out already, and more will go tomorrow. Elrond is sending elves, and they will get in touch with the rangers and maybe with Thranduil's folk in Mirkwood. And Aragorn has gone with Elrond's sons. We shall have to scour the lands all round for many long leagues before any move is made. So cheer up, Frodo. You will probably make quite the long stay here." "Ah," said Sam gloomily, "we'll just wait long enough for winter to come. That can't be..."
Sounding like Eeyore.
Yes. Oh, man.
"We'll just wait long enough for winter to come."
Well, little did he know.
Well, that's Sam, I think. He's always looking ahead, in my opinion.
He really does. Yeah. He's trying to consider everything and being... He wants to be prepared, is one thing about Sam. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's a prepper.
He is a prepper.
Oh, no.
A Mount Doomsday prepper.
Oh!
Huzzah!
No.
That's a thing now. Sam, the Mount Doomsday prepper.
Can we get him kicked off the show?
No. I really don't think it'll help our listenership.
Thank you, guys.
Do you have a ding-dong? Can you give yourself a point for that?
No.
Because that was... Look, Michael. Right. I give you a point for that. That was pretty good.
I think so.
I suppose you think that was terribly clever.
It was clever. A Mount Doomsday prepper. Man.
Coined right here on Secret Fire Podcast.
That's a t-shirt.
It is?
Samwise Gamgee, the original Mount Doomsday prepper. And it's a, as long as it's a picture, like a stencil outline of Sean Astin, I'm always.
Oh man, he is Sam.
Yeah,
he is. Mm-hmm. And then,
or Bob the Brain, if anyone.
Well, and then Bill Nighy is Sam. After
I'd say Bill Nighy more so, actually. I don't, you know, I can't see him and everything, his facial expressions, but
he does a great job in that BBC dramatization. If you folks don't have that, you need to get it.
There, well, there you go.
Audible, not a sponsor.
When will they be, though?
They sponsor everybody. They can't. They can't be giving out that much.
That's true. That's true. Where was I even?
Well, that's Mount Doomsday.
Yeah.
Stop. That can't be helped, said Bilbo. It's your fault partly, Frodo, my lad, insisting on waiting for my birthday. A funny way of honoring it, I can't help thinking. Not the day I should have chosen for letting the SBs, the Sackville Baggins, in the bag in. But there it is. You can't wait now till spring, and you can't go till the reports come back. When winter first begins to bite, and stones crack in the frosty night, when pools are black and trees are bare, 'tis evil in the wild to fare.
I love that. I love that imagery of stones crack in the frosty night. I don't know why that grabs me.
That's a good one.
Yeah. 'Tis.
'Tis.
Well said, well said.
Yes. But that, I'm afraid, will just be your luck. I'm afraid it will, said Gandalf. We can't start until we have found out about the riders. We can't start until we found out about the riders. I thought they were all destroyed in the flood, said Merry. We can't destroy ringwraiths like that, said Gandalf. The power of their master is in them, and they stand or fall by him. We hope that they were all unhorsed and unmasked, and so made for a while less dangerous. But we must find out for certain. In the meantime, you should try to forget your troubles, Frodo. I do not know if I can do anything to help you, but I will whisper this in your ears. Someone said that intelligence would be needed in the party, and he was right. I think I shall come with you.
Oh,
man, that's a relief right there.
You can feel it.
Yeah.
It's palpable.
So great was Frodo's delight at this announcement that Gandalf left the windowsill where he had been sitting and took off his hat and bowed.
I love that.
I only said, I think I shall come. Do not count on anything yet. In this matter, Elrond will have much to say. And your friend, the Strider. Which reminds me, I want to see Elrond. I must be off. How long do you think I shall have here? Said Frodo to Bilbo when Gandalf had gone. Oh, I don't know. I can't count the days in Rivendell, said Bilbo. But quite long. I should think we can have many a good talk. What about helping me with my book and making a start on the next? Have you thought of an ending? Well, yes, several, and all are dark and unpleasant, said Frodo. Oh, that won't do, said Bilbo. Books ought to have good endings. How would this do? And they all settled down and lived together happily ever after. It will do well, if ever it comes to that, said Frodo.
What do you think of that?
Hold on. Ah, said Sam. And where will they live? That's what I often wonder. Okay, what'd you ask? I'm sorry.
What do you think about that? Bilbo saying books, that won't do. Books ought to have good endings. He already said that in the last chapter.
Yeah.
Was it the previous chapter?
I can't remember. But probably.
Here recently, he's already said that. Ought they have a good ending? Hmm. And what does that mean? Can a good ending be good without good things happening? Or can a good ending just be good with bad things happening?
Would you rephrase that?
What makes a good ending, I wonder?
Well, tying up of all loose ends and a rounding off of
ding,
the story.
Ding, 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 ding. He won.
There you go.
From a literary perspective. Yeah. But from, like, a feel-good perspective, obviously good things would need to happen.
Right.
Well, maybe not necessarily good things with the story itself, but with how the audience takes in the final climax, I guess, their catharsis moment. Like, that's what would make a good ending. Even though if it was something bad that happened, it can still be a good ending. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yes. Well, I mean, in fact, I think we're going to find that to be the case of the Red Book of Westmarch and in and of itself. So should we think about Bilbo saying this? Books ought to have good endings. Do you think that he misunderstands what a good ending is?
No, I don't think Bilbo misunderstands very many things.
Yeah.
He's not naive.
No. No, he is not. And the life that he has lived, especially since turning 50 years old and making that decision to go on an adventure, right? He, in the past, I can't do the math right now, but it's been...
How old is he?
Well, now he's...
112?
No, he's 130-something now.
Oh.
Well, it's been 17 years since his 11th birthday.
That's right.
Right? He has learned much, and we know from the previous chapter that he is revered and respected and loved by all the peoples of Middle-earth, the peoples that know him. Boromir didn't know him.
Right, right.
Right? But those who do know him love him. And so I just found this to be an interesting thing. It may be a little bit of an elegiac lament because I've sensed that he's going through this in a big way.
Yeah. Okay.
He didn't expect to see Frodo again, or let's say he had hoped to, right? He had that hope, but now having him, and not only that, but Samwise Gamgee, the son of Bilbo's old gardener and friend, is there. It's family. And, of course, these, two crazy hobbits, Merry and Pippin, they're all related. This is a big family game. The Shire came to Bilbo. And so I think that there's a little bit of that that's influencing this saying. Maybe he's not even saying books ought to have good endings more than he's saying, I want you hobbits, you youngsters, to have a good ending. There's just a lot in that.
There is a lot. I wonder if he's not being Socratic with it.
In what way?
Well, he's asking the question, don't you
because
think
the Socratic method, yeah, that's what you're referring
exactly,
to.
Exactly, yes. And he's asking the question.
Which is a leading question.
Exactly, it's a leading question. And I think, just to step outside of the story for a second, Tolkien, we've already established his genius on the show. If it wasn't already established without us. And one of the things I think that Tolkien is very Tolkienly aware of.
Tolkien. I love that. Is a great pun.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mark that one up. We have two puns now.
Mount Doomsday Prepper.
Yes.
I have to say yours is better.
Tolkienly aware.
but he's aware of cliche. And that ending is very cliche.
Yes.
Well, books ought to have a good ending.
Right.
How would this do? And they all settle down and live together happily ever after. And
that's the most cliched.
That is a very cliche. Even when Lord of the Rings was written, that was already a cliche, a very well and firmly established cliche. And I wonder if Tolkien is kind of putting that element of himself into Bilbo, because it seems like Bilbo would also be aware of such cliches, because Bilbo is a very well-read hobbit, and Bilbo knows that a cliche can weaken the nuance and the gravity of a story.
Yes, yes, yes. And that was also one of Tolkien's complaints about the fairy stories that were in vogue at the time that he was writing this and writing essays on fairy story,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going in. That's why I highlighted this one line.
Yeah.
Because there's so much here. to chew on.
And I wonder if, and let's just say it is a leading question. It's a very Socratic method leading yes. question. And I wonder if Bilbo, let's go back into the story. If Bilbo is saying, yes, you can have a happily ever after. That's fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But don't just leave it at that. If this is Bilbo giving Frodo advice on how to write the ending of a story, maybe it's his subtle way of saying you have to be more expressive than that. And that type of culminated expression takes time to hammer out, to craft. I don't know. That's no, one way. That's it. One way to look at it.
I love it. See, sprung that on ya.
Hey, and there you go.
I pitched that ball to you, and you swung and knocked it out.
I don't even play basketball.
You
that was dude, that was definitely rugby.
Oh, okay, all right, sorry.
Or lacrosse.
That must be one of those Tolkien sports. Is that in the Shire?
Do they play that's that in the going Shire? To be rugby. Should definitely be in the Tolkien biopic. That has wrapped up. Oh goodness! Come on, get back to the book.
Wait,
back to
the book. Who's playing Tolkien in that?
I don't know.
Nicholas Holt.
Nicholas Nickleby.
No, Nicholas Holt.
Okay, Holt.
He's in a.
Get back to the text, please.
Oh man. Okay. I was going to actually skip the next couple paragraphs.
All right.
But I can see that you've highlighted something.
No. I just there's things that stand out to me and. They're either going to be. I do like this in the following paragraph. For a while, the hobbits continued to talk and think of the past journey and of the perils that lay ahead. But such was the virtue of the land of Rivendell that soon all fear and anxiety was lifted from their minds.
Where else have we heard that in this story?
Well, I don't know what you're referring to, but I keep going back to Flight to the Ford. Or immediately preceding the battle at the base of Weathertop, and Aragorn encouraging the hobbits as they're trying to get. Wait, we need to get Frodo to Rivendell. That's 12 days away or whatever. Hey, persevere. Trust me. Persevere. Have faith, because in the house of Elrond, the tables will be well laden, and we have. Picked out, of course, this is not allegory. We got to say it again. This is not a one-to-one correlation with the scriptures. There are just so many Christian themes running throughout this book. As Tolkien said, could only be natural, seeing as how he is a Christian, which can be deduced by his stories. And this Elrond's house, the last homely house, and we made the case of it being much like what Jesus promised. I go away to prepare a place for you. In my Father's house are many rooms, which are at the last homely house, and it's a place of rest and a place of refreshment. And this is what they have experienced here all of this time. Such was the virtue of the land of Rivendell that soon all fear and anxiety was lifted from their minds.
It took me back, though. It took me back. Such was the virtue of the house of Tom Bombadil. That all fear and anxiety was lifted from their minds.
Yes.
And I immediately thought of that sound of rushing, of bubbling water, of murmuring water, and that relaxation.
Living waters? Living waters means. It's moving waters.
Mm-hmm.
When you read living water in the New Testament, dear friends, that means water that is moving. It's not sitting still. It's moving, living waters. Oh, and that's what Jesus provides, living waters.
There's a very good illustration about that. I'll tell you after the show.
Okay.
But it's something, it was a sermon illustration that I heard a few, maybe a couple months ago.
Yeah, I'll be looking forward to hearing that. The future, good or ill, was not forgotten, but ceased to have any power over the present. Health and hope grew strong in them, and they were content with each good day as it came taking pleasure in every meal and in every word and song. I put this note in my, that's what I love about Kindle. From Mark chapter 10, verses 28 through 30 out of the NIRZVA, the New Revised Standard Version, Peter began to say to him, look, to Jesus, we have left everything and followed you. Jesus said, truly, I tell you, there is no one who has left house or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or fields for my sake and for the sake of the good news who will not receive a hundredfold now in this age, houses, brothers and sisters, mothers and children, and fields with persecutions, and in the age to come, eternal life. We've left it all. We've left home and hearth. We've left the shire. We've left the hill. We've left Bag End for this mission, to deal with this ring, to be rid of the burden of Middle Earth. And they're being told, you know, in the house of Elrond, there are rooms and there are fields and there are houses and brothers and sisters and mothers and children and fields, but there are also persecutions. And right now they have that reprieve. And they are experiencing that, and Tolkien is stopping to make sure that we understand that they have this reprieve in the last homely house. So there you go. So the days slipped away as each morning dawned bright and fair, and each evening followed cool and clear. That's a poem. Carry on.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry for all the interjections. Not really. Not sorry.
That, no. You don't listen to pop radio.
I don't know. I heard my kid saying it.
I was going to skip ahead all the way to when Elrond comes back in and he summons the hobbits to him.
Okay.
The
hobbits had been nearly 2 months in the house of Elrond.
Mm-hmm. It is now December. Elrond has, like Gandalf already said, Elrond has sent out the scouts to scope out the Ringwraiths, to see where they are. The scouts finally start coming back in December.
And we are right around the time of Christmas. This may be December 24th, maybe a day or two before, but we are right here. We're leaving on Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
8 of the Ringwraiths have been accounted for.
Okay.
And they are at Mordor recuperating. they are hospital.
They're licking their wounds?
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. And then Elrond comes in. Elrond summoned the hobbits to him. He looked gravely at Frodo.
Mm.
The time has come, he said. If the ring is to set out, it must go soon. But those who go with it must not count on their errand being aided by war or force. Mm. They must pass into the domain of the enemy, far from aid. Do you still hold to your word, Frodo, that you will be the ring bearer?
The scape hobbit?
Who carries away
the burden of Middle Earth.
Mm-hmm. I do, said Frodo. I will go
with
Sam.
He's a hero. He's a little hero.
Mm-hmm. He takes it on. Then I cannot help you much, not even with counsel, said Elrond. I can foresee very little of your road, and how your task is to be achieved, I do not know. The shadow has crept now to the feet of the mountains and draws nigh even to the borders of the Grey Flood. And under the shadow, all is dark to me. Hmm. You will meet many foes, excuse me, some open and some disguised. And you may find friends upon your way when you least look for them. Look for it. I will send out messages such as I can contrive to those whom I know in the wide world. But so perilous are the lands now become that some may well miscarry or come no quicker than you yourself.
It's perilous.
Very, wow. Yeah.
He's just laying it out.
Yeah. And I will choose you companions to go with you as far as they will or fortune allows. The number must be few, since your hope is in speed and secrecy. Had I a host of elves in armor of the elder days, it would avail little save to arouse the power of Mordor. I think every time Elrond speaks, he just qualifies how dark the world is outside.
He's not leading him down the primrose path.
Yeah, which is good. I mean, he's getting
the mindset. Let me shoot it to you straight.
Exactly. The company of the ring shall be nine, and the nine walkers shall be set against the nine riders that are evil. Even the contrast, pause from the narrative. Even the contrast of the nine walkers versus the nine riders. Automatically, it just sounds like the odds are against the company. let's see. And the nine walkers shall be set against the nine riders that are evil. With you and your faithful servant, Gandalf will go. For this shall be his great task, and maybe the end of his labors. Oh man. All right. See, I don't know what's coming up specifically in the book, but I know what he's talking about.
With you and your faithful servant, Sam, right? Mm-hmm. Gandalf will go. For this shall be his great task. This is what he was sent here for, was to aid the free folk in the battle against Sauron, and may be the end of his labors. Wow.
For the rest, they shall represent the other free peoples of the world, elves, dwarves, and men. Legolas shall be for the elves, and Gimli, son of Gloin, for the dwarves. They are willing to go at least to the passes of the mountains, and maybe beyond. For men you shall have Aragorn, son of Arathorn, for the ring of Isildur concerns him closely. Strider, cried Frodo. Yes, he said with a smile. I ask leave once again to be your companion, Frodo. I would have begged you to come, said Frodo. Only I thought you were going to Minas Tirith with Boromir. I am, said Aragorn. And the sword that was... Sword. Sorry, I was watching Aladdin the other day with my niece. And one of the lyrics is, bad guys with swords. Because that's how Robin Williams sang it. So now when I say swords, I say swords. What? Anyway... I am, said Aragorn, and the sword that was broken shall be reforged ere I set out to war. But your road and our road lie together for many hundreds of miles. Therefore, Boromir will also be in the company. He is a valiant man. Oh, something just clicked. So if only eight of the raiders have been found, and we know that Boromir doesn't make it past this book... Right.
Hey.
Spoiler.
Hey, no, I'm sorry. That's in the movie.
No,
I can say
nobody
that.
Knows that.
No, hey. What?
Oh.
I don't know. Look, there goes Tolkien just trying to make things even again. But I do want to point out this. Elrond even says that he'll find companions to go with Frodo as far as they will or fortune allows. And I think it just happens to be so fortunate, so one might even say predestined, that Aragorn's road
appointed.
And Frodo's appointed, yes, destined, that Frodo's road and Aragorn's road run together for many hundreds of miles. I think it's just very cool.
Yes.
There remain two more to be found, said Elrond. These I will consider. Of my household, I may find some that it seems good to me to send. But that will leave no place for us, cried Pippin in dismay. We don't want to be left behind. We want to go with Frodo. That is because you do not understand and cannot imagine what lies ahead, said Elrond. Neither does Frodo, said Gandalf, unexpectedly supporting Pippin. Nor do any of us see clearly. It is true that if these hobbits understood the danger, they would not dare to go. But they would still wish to go, or wish that they dared, and be shamed and unhappy. I think, Elrond, that in this matter it would be well to trust rather to their friendship than to great wisdom. Even if you chose for us an elf lord, such as Glorfindel, he could not storm the Dark Tower, nor open the road to the fire by the power that is in him. That's what I was talking about earlier. Gandalf sticking up for Pippin and his notion that Pippin and Merry should be the other two that accompany the company.
Accompanying the company, I agree. So I agree. And this is just another example talking about Glorfindel, this fantastic, this great elf lord who walks in both worlds or sees in both worlds. Right?
He would be a wonderful asset to take on this journey.
Absolutely. But he could not storm the Dark Tower, nor open the road to the fire by the power that is in him. And this really goes back, maybe we talked about this on Finding Christ in Cinema, the episode that we just talked about. But, you know, really, for it is written, here we are in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 19. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the cleverness of the clever I will set aside. Where is the wise man? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? Since in the wisdom of the world, since in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not come to know God. God was well pleased through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe. Right? Indeed, Jews ask for signs and Greeks search for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, to Jews a stumbling block and to Gentiles foolishness. But to those who are the called, both Jews and Greek, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God, because the foolishness of God is wiser than Sauron. And the weakness of God is stronger than Sauron. Why? Because consider your calling, brethren, that there were not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble, but God has chosen the foolish things of Middle Earth to shame the wise, Saruman the wise, even. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to shame the things which are strong, and the base things of the world and the despised. God has chosen the things that are not, so that he may nullify the things that are. That's playing out. This is what Elrond is worried about. Let me tell you exactly what you're going to be up against. I'm not going to whitewash this. This is going to be hard and ugly. Just like what Jesus had to do, right? Mm-hmm. And Frodo, as the scape hobbit that takes the burden of Middle-earth away into the wilderness, he is going to do something. He's going to go on a journey, a quest that even Glorfindel could not do in all of his might and power. The foolish things of the world, the small things, the weak things, to shame the wise and the strong and the powerful. Sorry, little interjection there.
Oh, there you go. Had to work in those Christian themes somewhere.
Yeah.
As if they weren't already there. You speak gravely, said Elrond, but I am in doubt. The Shire I forebode is not free now from peril, and these two I had thought to send back there as messengers to do what they could, according to the fashion of their country, to warn the people of danger, of their danger. In any case, I judge that the younger of these two, Peregrine Took, should remain. My heart is against his going. Then, Master Elrond, you will have to lock me in prison or send me home tied in a sack, said Pippin, for otherwise I shall follow the company. Well, let it be so, then. You shall go, said Elrond, and he sighed. Now the tale of the Nine is filled. In 7 days, the company must depart.
Oh, goodness. So 7 days. So we have that puts us back to, what, the 18th of December?
Mm-hmm.
Of Third Age 3018. The time had come for planning. Right? And that's what's going on.
That is what's going on.
Okay. So 1 week out from Christmas. With the 7 days, they are going to leave on Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
I know Tolkien did that on purpose.
You know he had
he
to.
He does everything on purpose.
With intent.
With.
Yes.
Yes. With forethought. With forethought. Malice of forethought? Malice of.
Well, he didn't do it maliciously.
Oh, no. No, no, no.
He did it deliciously.
Oh!
Like, wouldst thou like a taste of butter?
Cooked inside of a turkey upside down?
Yeah! Buddy. Black Phillip cooks stuff on Thanksgiving. I love that.
Well, then, is that where we are stopping today?
We could go.
Well, in 7 days, we'd be back, huh? That'd be kind of perfect.
Get it.
Hmm? And we depart in 7 days?
We can stop there.
No?
Okay. I think, let's go ahead and stop.
You need say no more. We best get a move on. There are still goblins about.
Oh, bother. More mountains?
No. Don't you see? The sun is setting in the west, behind the mountains. We're on the other side, to the edge of the land beyond.
I don't know how many times I've read The Lord of the Rings, how much time I have spent in Middle Earth, but the way that we are doing this show just really tickles my fancy. This slow walk, this stopping and examining and considering Tolkien and his influences and his likes and his dislikes and the story that he felt needed to be told. This is just a great experiment in podcasting. Where is it?
Oh, geez.
A great experiment in podcasting! That was from Mount Doom.
Oh, man.
Mount Doomsday Preppers.
No,
anything that you want to say? Any last words on that that section of the chapter?
We've already talked about it, but I just want to talk again about how much attention that Tolkien dedicates to reassuring the readers that, yeah, it's pretty dark outside in the world, but that there are these places of rest and peace.
Refreshment,
yeah. Yes. Encouragement.
Yes.
And
living waters.
With what we just read about the last homely house on the left with Elrond's house. We just see that once again.
Yeah.
And it's cool because, I mean, it's like every time we come to one of these places in the story, in the narrative, we as the reader ourselves are also refreshed and encouraged, and it gives us hope for the characters. So
I really appreciate that Micah pointed out that Bilbo is he's no fool of a Took. He's very perceptive. He knows a lot, mm-hmm. doesn't he, Micah? You have a great love for Bilbo as a character.
I do.
Why?
Well, because of that. I mean, in the Hobbit, he is a bit of a fool of a Took.
He's out of his element.
Mm-hmm. He's never done this before.
He's got some growing.
Never even imagined something like that.
But as the story goes on, you see him, it even says Bilbo has developed into something he and especially Thorin and the dwarves never thought he would ever be.
Yeah.
But that Gandalf knew he would become. And that just continues to grow. And by the time the Lord of the Rings story happens, he's even wiser than he was.
And because he has spent so many years deep in the lore of Middle-earth and transcribing and translating ancient texts, he knows so much, and he's able to come up with these fantastic songs and lays about the history. We owe what we know, besides J.R.R. Tolkien, let's get into the world specifically, all that we know, we owe it to Bilbo.
Yeah. Huh. I love it.
And it was just so, again, so beautiful in the last chapter when he speaks up very well, very well. I know, you know, you just see I mean, look at him through Boromir's eyes. Look at this little guy. Look, he's like a little clown. Look at him. He's so cute, you know? That I mean, just dismissive. Because he has his own mannerisms. He is Bilbo Baggins, and yep. He behaves like Bilbo Baggins. And as Boromir's stifling, you know, he's about to roll on the floor laughing. How funny. What is this, a court jester?
Right.
Right?
Yeah. And then he sees that no one else is laughing.
No one else.
No one. Like, everyone's looking at him with the utmost respect.
Oh, my goodness. That is such a moving moment. And we do need to recall Bilbo's history.
Mm-hmm. And part of that, also my favorite part, is that the only one smiling is Gloin, because he's remembering.
From love. Yes. Yeah. Fondness. Oh! That's my wee lad.
Wait, what?
Yeah, great stuff, great thoughts. So what stood out to you, dear listeners of the Secret Fire podcast? What stood out in this part of the chapter to you, and why? We want to hear from you. And we did send out party invitations many, many moons ago. Well, not many moons ago, but many weeks ago. And at least one party invitation did come back.
Hey.
I think so. I don't know. Where is that?
What on earth are these?
Replies to the party invitations.
Good gracious.
And there you go. From patron Saint Philip. He's a patron saint because he supports every month the ongoing work here at the Secret Fire Podcast and the GCT Network as a whole. Supports us on our Patreon page at patreon.com/GCTN. And he sent in a quick little email from the last episode,
yep.
Episode number 28 of the Secret Fire podcast, where we talked, it was part 8 of the Council of Elrond.
It's a little haiku.
Oh.
A little haiku.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yes.
Oh, yes. I love haiku.
Brendan commentates, Michael goes down rabbit trails, Micah shakes his head.
But to this, I am nodding my head.
Oh,
there you go.
In agreement. I'm just loving the fact that it's a haiku, and I didn't realize that. Let me see. Brendan commentates. Okay. Michael goes down rabbit trails. Okay. Micah shakes his head. Perfect. More haikus, please, from listeners. Haiku is one of my very favorite forms of poetry.
Because we'll get them now.
Yes, the Secret Fire Podcast haiku segment. So thank you for sending that in. I don't know how accurate it is, but regardless. Also, a shout-out to a Twitter friend, Diana Meerkast. We've heard from her before, but she and I had a nice little conversation on Twitter last week. You know, Micah and I, a couple of weeks ago, because we weren't recording a new episode of Secret Fire Podcast, we came into the studio and we played Lotro here on our Twitch channel. Uploaded the video to our YouTube channel, so anybody can go and watch that. Just search Secret Fire Podcast on YouTube. Well, it was the Yule Festival in Lord of the Rings Online, and so Micah and I got on there, broadcasted that, and went through all the quests there in Frostbluff and the town of Winterhome. Had a great time. Well, Diana watched it on YouTube. Well, I say watched, but Brendan, Diana is blind. She cannot see Lotro. And the way that we walked through it, I read all the dialogue with the NPCs. What does NPC stand for?
Non-player character.
Okay. And we were able to paint a picture for her that she was able to see Lotro.
That's cool.
And that was, you know, that really made me happy. And we are planning on doing more of that here in the new year. Much more streaming of the Lotro. Because another thing is patron Saint Ron of the South Farthing. He lives down there in the South Farthing. They don't have good internet. Uh-huh. In fact, I think they have that satellite kind of internet. Mm-hmm. And they have a big old fat cap on their data, so they don't get much data down there per month. And so he's not able to play Lotro, but he did watch the video of us going through Yule Festival and just loved it.
Oh, that's cool.
And so he was able to experience that. So there you go. That's our party invitations and feedback from listeners and viewers as well. And of course, this podcast is being recorded on video on our Twitch channel, and we will upload that to our YouTube channel as well. You know, keep them coming. The party invitations are always out, always looking for feedback from our listeners out there. Anything fun to talk about? Micah!
Hey.
Let's get an update on your current play, your current production that you're in, Arsenic and Old Lace.
It's coming along really well, actually.
What's your character?
Mortimer Brewster.
Yes, which anybody has watched the old film version of that, Micah is Cary Grant.
I need to watch that, actually.
Yeah,
I've seen to have snippets on YouTube.
A viewing party. Your older sister and your friend Ray, they are play the two crazy old aunts.
Mm-hmm. Abby and Martha.
Yeah. Okay. And when is this going to... When does the...
Oh, boy.
What do you say? When does it open?
This time I do know. January 12th is the first night.
Here at the Manchester Arts Center.
When does yours open?
That's very, very quickly approaching.
Yes.
Well, just real quick, in relation to Micah's party tree, I'm directing Arsenic. In
You're directing Fly. Micah?
No.
Oh.
Not that production.
Oh,
in Shelbyville.
It's a competing production.
I wish he was directing this one. I like our director, but anyway.
Yeah, but we love Brendan.
Yes, exactly.
You may like your director, but we love Brendan.
y'all are going up in January. Mm-hmm. We're going up in March. So
okay,
that's enough of
well, good offer. Deal.
I might want to see that one because I do want to see it, but I might have to go down there.
He might do want to see it.
I might do.
And we heard about more turkeys and aluminum things. Quick update. I think I mentioned on the previous episode the radio drama or mystery radio theater that I'm working on with the owner of the local radio station and a few other men. Oh, goodness. Our first story. You know, anybody that's local will know what this means, but it's the Nessie of Normandy Lake. Yeah! Okay, can't wait to be able to share more about that, but the story's coming along fantastic. I'm really enjoying this. So, a lot of good stuff going on here in the past few weeks. But in the meantime, listeners, we want to hear from you. And the Secret Fire Podcast is live each Saturday, Lord willing, at about 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time in the GCT Network studio. So you can join us for video on our Twitch page at twitch.tv/Secret Fire Podcast.
You can join us on the Arkenstone server in Lord Rings Online at lotro.com. And you can support the GCT Network and the Secret Fire Podcast on Patreon at patreon.com/GCTN.
To find out more about the Secret Fire Podcast, as well as the other shows that we produce here at the Great Commission Transmission Network, including Finding Christ in Cinema and The Theonauts, get over to our main website at gctnetwork.com.
Please send all feedback and haikus.
Haikus!
Via email at secretfire@gctnetwork.com, or you can call us up on the Hobbit hotline and leave a vocally recorded haiku at 507-407-GCTN. That's 507-407-4286. Now, let's say you want to have a conversation with us on Twitter.
Please, like Diana did.
That's right. You can find us at Secret Fire Cast. But let's just say you want to listen to the good old podcast.
I do.
Well, you're doing it right now.
I'm doing it.
Oh.
I'm doing the podcast right now.
Please subscribe to us at iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite pod catcher by searching them all for the Secret Fire Podcast.
Our theme song, Hobbit's Dance, is from the album Memories of Middle-earth by Brobdignagian Bards. Find out more about them and buy all the music and all the other stuff on their website at thebards.net. And until next time...
I regret to announce this is the end. I'm going now. I bid you all a very fond farewell.
Goodbye!
Goodbye!
It was tied to the last homely house on the left by the sea.
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
Is your Great Commission transmission at gctnetwork.com. This is your Great Commission transmission. This is your Great Commission transmission.
We still haven't done that joke.
I still haven't done. You know, it's the last episode of the year.
Yes.
I think I can do it.
Okay, you want to do a special thing? Okay,
happy,
here we go.
Happy New Year's, listeners. Here is the great and wonderful joke. Once upon a time, there were three best friends. These are good old Southern boys that like to go hunting. And they had heard about a really neat hunting spot that they wanted to go try out. The thing about it, though, it was tucked away in a nice foresty area that was surrounded by a huge grassy field. And the grass in the field was about waist high, and they had to tromp through it every step they took. Tromp, 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 tromp. While they're tromping to get to this grassy field, or tromping through the grassy field to get to the nice new hunting spot.
It's not a grassy knoll.
No, okay. No, and there was not a second anything. One of them, because the grass is so tall, he didn't see it when he did it, but he stubs his toe on a giant anvil that is in the field. He looks at his friends, what's a giant anvil doing in the middle of this field? I don't know, let's just walk on past it. So they walk past it, and then they get to this giant hole in the ground. The hole's about 6 or 7 feet wide, and they can't see the bottom of it. Well, being the naturally curious Southern boys that they are, they want to see how deep the hole goes. And the first thing they think of to see how deep the hole is, they start spitting down it. And they'll hear their spit hit the bottom, surely. Well, they start spitting, and they don't hear anything hit the bottom. Well, the next, they start kicking little rocks and pebbles down, and maybe they'll hear those hit the bottom. Well, they don't hear those hit the bottom. The guy that stubbed his toe, he's like, hey, let's go back and get that giant anvil. We'll just drop it down the hole.
Surely we'll hear that.
Surely we'll hear that, but don't call me Shirley. They all three go back to
Leslie
it.
Leslie Nielsen?
They pick it up, and they drop it down the hole, and they don't hear it hit the bottom. A couple seconds go by, they still don't hear it, and they're about to walk away when they realize that there's a rope tied to the anvil that's being dragged down to the hole as long as the anvil is falling. And they follow the rope all the way out to the horizon, and then mowing the grass as it's being pulled by the anvil attached to the rope is a little goat. I kid you not.
Oh, I kid you not. Oh, another pun.
The goat is just mowing down the grass in a zigzag pattern all the way down the hill through the grass, finally hits the hole, and the anvil still has not hit the bottom. They're about to walk away again because they've got some hunting to do. They're about to walk away again when from the same direction that they heard the goat coming, they turn around and see this old farmer running down the same zigzag pattern that the goat had just mowed down. And he's running through, Becky! 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 He finally gets to the boys and says, Boys. Sorry, I'm laughing just thinking about the punchline. Boys, have you seen my goat? Have you seen my goat? And the boys go, yeah. Went down that hole right there. And the farmer goes, no, that's impossible. It was tied to an anvil.
Oh, no.
suppose you think that was terribly clever.
Oh, man. I love it.
It was tied to an anvil.
It was tied to an anvil.
There you go. Merry Christmas.
Oh, yes. Merry listeners. Christmas. Happy New Year, guys. Happy New Year.
And we'll see you on the flip side.
That's right. Okay. Now for real. Goodbye.
With the goat.
Goodbye. Next, I'll tell the one about the quiche.
And no more kidding.
No more kidding around. Oh, Lord. We gotta hunt for Moria.